friends, this is Events Demystified, brought to you by Different Events, and I'm your host, Anka. Wherever you are, wherever you work, whatever you do, or whatever your organization is, here's the thing. It is time. Get it on your calendar. Events are coming back with a vengeance. And let me say it with a little bit of a French accent just for full effect. Vengeance. After the madness of the last 16 months and with a dazzling light at the end of the tunnel, we came to a place in time where we need to rethink the entire concept of events. What is an event? An occurrence with a beginning and an end, right? But today's events look very different, and whether virtual, hybrid, or in person, we do need events. A thriving economy needs events. And today I have just the right person to talk about events, because she's been planning and producing them for more than 2 decades, and she is ready to smash the rest of 2021. Samantha Swain has more than 20 years of experience planning and fundraising experience, as well as expertise. She founded Swain Strategies, a fundraising event consultancy, in 2004, working internationally with nonprofit organizations to produce impactful events that move missions forward. Samantha is the co-author of Planning a Successful Major Donor Event and the founder of the annual Elevate Fundraising Event Conference. And she is one of my heroes in event fundraising, because she's been doing it so well and a thought leader really in this space. She travels nationally, internationally to teach nonprofit professionals the tools they need to elevate their impact through events. And a few fun facts, she used to work for the Grammys. She has been producing events again for 20 some years. But without further ado, let's welcome Sam in and have a conversation about events.
Thanks for having me today, Anka. I'm glad to be here.
I am so happy to have this conversation with you and discuss all things events. I mean, it's been a long time no see, right? More than a year. When was the last time? I think it was February 29th. It was a 2020 leap year. I remember that much. Yep. When we had our last in-person event, the Oregon Convention Center.
Yep. Together throwing a big fundraising event for ACLU. And then a mere like 10 days later, the whole world came to a screeching halt.
It was unbelievable. It was like so crazy. I'm still thinking about the fact that just recently I got on a plane. We were talking about that pre-show, where I haven't flown in more than a year. And it was so unreal to just be doing that whole thing, you know, where, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm actually flying.
It's a brave new world out there. I am not brave enough to fly yet. I will one day, but I used to be on planes all the time. And then all of a sudden, haven't been on a plane since the start of COVID. And yeah, I'm like slowly tiptoeing into the world of reentry right now.
It was interesting to be on a plane for the first time after so long. I can tell you that much. It's almost like I forgot how to check in my suitcases. I literally went through the security and then I realized I had 4 luggages like rolling through, and everybody's like, what are you doing? You can't just take this into carry-on. This is a check-in. And I'm like, oh, shoot. Yeah, I totally forgot.
There's new rules too. Like, I can't even imagine. Like, what do you need? Do you need COVID cards or vaccine or testing or a bubble or mask? Like, what are all the
surreal things you need to do? Yeah, especially traveling with a family, because before I was kind of traveling alone. But anyway, it was just so interesting. I can't wait to go back to some sort of sense of normalcy. But before we get into our conversation today, Sam, I feel like I have a free pass on asking you this question, because I wanted to ask you for a very long time. What is one unusual thing about the way you plan and produce events that few people would ever guess? Like, in other words, tell our audience, what makes Samantha Swain in events?
Well, I think working in the nonprofit sector for over 20 years, my goal and personal mission is elevating the nonprofit. So I think the thing that's unique about my work is that I don't work outside of the nonprofit sector. I don't do corporate events. I don't do weddings. I don't do other gatherings of any type. I'm really focused on nonprofit events that move the mission forward, both fundraising or programmatic, but move the mission forward. And I believe strongly in the power of gathering people. I think that there is some magic that happens when people are in community together. And that's why I do the work that I do. I think the other thing that might be kind of unique about my work is that within our team, we work really hard to make sure that we are only recommending and bringing to the table other like-minded nonprofit partners. So working with you is a great example of a AV vendor provider who is managing all the tech on the back end, but also can speak to the nonprofit's needs, understands their budget restrictions, understands their board, can even come and speak at a board meeting. That kind of partnership to me, a resource that can be in the nonprofit sector, is the sort of key to our success, our valuable partners that we endorse as partners who support nonprofits.
I think that is definitely the secret sauce when I think of SWIM strategies, because there is a reason why it's been successful in the space of nonprofit events. And I think of you and the whole team of SWIM strategies as thought leaders when it comes to nonprofit events. And I love to see how much that's been also the pioneer effort that has happened in Portland in general in events when it came to the virtual pivot to events. You'd be surprised that a lot of other places have not had the same experience, because a lot of the nonprofits did not have those type of influences in their sphere, and they missed a big time in virtual fundraising last year. We're talking about a different type of event now, but 2020 has been successful for a lot of nonprofits because of this push into the virtual world, and because of people like you that have come up with, okay, here's what we're going to do, and here's the plan, and there is opportunity here. Let's not miss this.
Yeah, I think that the beginning stages and the beginning steps of moving into virtual were out of survival, right? The number of organizations that we had that were dependent upon those funds being raised, they already had an event that was planned, and they already had content, a program, a fundraising strategy, and they needed to continue moving forward because to keep their doors open, they needed those funds. That really drove us to take the leap. And I would be one of those naysayers who thought there's a lot that's not going to work in the virtual space. But I think that if nothing else, the least we can do is ask. The least we can do is get in front of donors. And was so pleasantly surprised to see that not only did it work, but it actually created some incredible opportunities, sort of knocking down some barriers we've had in the past in the fundraising world and making fundraising really accessible. That this was now something we could invite our staffs to be a part of, our clients to be a part of. And all of a sudden the nonprofit space became much more inclusive and the fundraising event space became much more inclusive. So I have loved the virtual space. I am so excited to return to gathering. And I think we all need like a year of reunion events. Like we all need that time to like reconnect and emerge from this. But I also think that we've learned a lot, and we're going to continue to push into how can we take what we've learned and move into gathering in a new way.
Absolutely. So with that, segueing into the next question really is this concept that we are somewhat ready to move into hybrid reality of events. The likelihood of in-person events have increased about by 80% in February, from 80 to like 84% based on some research that I was reading that was provided by Freeman. And so everyone is thinking that by the third quarter or the fourth quarter of 2021, there is a high chances of us moving into this new space, hybrid events. Obviously, it depends where you are geographically, as well as how comfortable your audience or your members and your donors are to get in person. But for anyone that is thinking to plan and host a hybrid event this year, what does a fundraising event look like post-COVID-19?
There are so many answers to that question. It's unbelievable. The first thing that I think is that it doesn't look like it used to. That's the first sort of starting place, is that we used to gather, you know, 500, 1,000 people in a ballroom. And I don't think that we're going to see that for a long time for a lot of reasons. We're not going to see all of our audiences feeling safe to return to gathering. We're not going to see the same interest in being in large crowds. I think that there will probably be some people that don't go out. There will be some people who only go to small gatherings. So I think that there is the sort of safety element. I also think, though, that there is this deep need. We've all been in this place of deprivation, and there is this deep need for authentic connection, like really immersive, valuable, spending my time to connect my heart to someone I love. And that, I think, is what's going to drive a lot of decision making about where people spend their energy. So I suspect we're shifting into this place where events are going to be smaller. I think that they're going to be equally impactful, if not more impactful. I think that they're going to force us to start to look at the meaning of why we're gathering and what we can really transform by gathering together.
So for anyone that is thinking to plan and host a hybrid event this year, what does a fundraising event look like post-COVID-19?
I think it looks different. And I think that there's opportunity here for us to actually start to ask ourselves why we gather people together. Because I think that people are not interested in going back to the same. I think that that's true in every sector, in every type of workplace, in every type of gathering, in every type of friend get together, that we're no longer interested in sort of just the social chat, how are you, how's the weather? I think we are living in a place where we are now so interested and invested in connecting to each other that that needs to be at the forefront of event planning. So we need to think about smaller events. I think we're gonna see small but mighty events that are equally impactful, but really give people authentic connection and allow people to really understand mission and put mission in front of anything else, any other goals. It's not about the meal being served unless the meal is part of the story. It's not about the decorations unless the decorations are part of the story. And that we're looking into how do we bring people into an experience, not just bring people back together. Because I think, you know, we're now in a place where we really want to invest in each other. And we're not going to have the same audiences. We're just not going to have folks as interested in gathering in big, giant ballrooms. We're going to have a smaller audience interested in really investing deeply in connection.
Absolutely. Connection, community, mission. Those are kind of like the themes that keep recurring in this new format of events and the conversation of what this looks like in a post-COVID-19 era. So with this, you know, the new kid in town, hybrid events, everybody's saying that again and again. They are supposed to, hybrid events are supposed to combine the best of both worlds, the excitement of an in-person with a deeper reach of a virtual format. But what are some of the top mistakes to avoid when hosting this type of a hybrid fundraising event, especially as it relates to the nonprofit sector?
I think the first mistake, as I was just saying, is to assume we're going back to the way it always was. I think that we have to, one, think about safety first, and two, really ask ourselves what's the impact we can make by bringing people together. Once we've determined what our outcomes are, what we want as a result of the event, then we can design for that event. So I think we have to sort of go into an exercise of breaking down the box. So we have to not just lean on the tools we used to have, but really move into creativity and brainstorming, which I know has been like the one tool everyone's leaned on in COVID. And now is not any different. I think that this is a time to rethink. The other thing that I think is going to be the big conundrum for folks is how do they treat the experience so that an at-home audience feels equal in experience to the in-room audience? And to me, I think that there are a couple of key things that we can do to make that really a focal point. One is that I think programming, speeches, storytelling, videos, entertainment can play really well to both audiences. But so unstructured time, socializing, dancing, that doesn't play well to an at-home audience. So I think we kind of break the event up a little bit and create two distinct moments. One moment that is a shared moment for everyone that is the program. And then the other additional elements that are just for the people in the room that are really more about connecting those folks in a social setting, a little bit more of the networking and celebration. So I think that we're going to have to decouple and not just broadcast what's happening in the room. We're going to have to broadcast specifically what plays well to the stage. And if you're looking for an example of how to do that, I highly recommend watching the Golden Globes. It's a great example of there's a party going on in the room. There's a program that's happening for both the at-home audience and the folks in the room. But then there's this whole other thing that's happening of people socializing. There's networking beforehand. There's red carpet. There's dancing afterwards. There's parties afterwards. And so that idea that really what is broadcast to your home audience is specifically the program. So I think we have to think about our audiences equally having an experience. And in that, I think we have to treat them the same when they donate. I don't think that we can only recognize giving happening in the room I don't think we can only recognize giving happening from out of the room. So I think we're going to have to really lean on technology to be our friend and lean into text to give platforms where people can equally be recognized no matter where they're giving from.
Those are some amazing tips because it's really a segue into my next question, which was more like regarding the format that you would recommend regarding this hybrid fundraising event model. And I couldn't agree more, like we can just make it where the in-person audience gives one way and then what are we going to do? You know, are we going to like make them all look at their phones? Like how is this going to work? Because those are some of the questions that really they pop up a lot when it comes to nonprofit events and process and fundraising parallel. Raising of bidding during the actual event when you have these two audiences involved, how do you make this process as smooth as possible and without making one audience feel like they're not as important or they're not as involved or they're not as participant into the process as they should be. Now, as event professionals, we know that the magic of a successful event is all in the details, but in this post-pandemic world, there's also this new set expectations regarding the cost, the networking, the experience design, and so forth. So my next question is a twofold question. What is the best way to manage those expectations for a client that either hosted a virtual event in 2020 and now is considering hybrid, or they've never hosted a virtual event before and they're just diving into this new world and new format of events and they're thinking, what does that look like? We've heard about this hybrid event model everybody's talking about, but what is it and how does it relate to us and how is that a good idea for our event?
Oh, great questions. That's a complicated one because there's so many variables, but I think there are some basic starting points that everyone should be looking at. The first question that I would ask is, what are you trying to achieve by hosting this event? What is the change, the outcome, the mission impact? What are you trying to achieve? It may be that it's a fundraising dollar amount. It may be that it's also a reunion. Our goal is to bring people back together and have them feel connected. I had an organization tell me the other day that their team has been working so hard that their number one priority of their event was to literally nourish their staff and to help their staff understand the impact that they had in community, to feel rejuvenated for their work. So if you have that as the outcome, that allows you to think about the design of your at-home audience and your in-person audience to serve that need. So in this particular event, this is going to be the first time that they've invited all 75 members of their staff to be at the event, sitting at tables. It's also the first time that their staff and donors are going to be seated together interacting, and their staff will be the key featured story of the event. So they're really going to lift up and prop up and hold up their staff in celebration. So I think that understanding the outcome first allows for the design. The second thing, though, that is so tricky, and this is where I think you need like a doctor and a lawyer on your board to help navigate, is safety protocols and how you address COVID. It's true that a lot of people are getting vaccinated and restrictions are being lifted, but there is also a lot of transmission still happening. We are still in the midst of this pandemic. And so as we talk about a post-pandemic world, the reality is that it's not linear. We're going to be experiencing step forward, a step back. We expect to see that in the fall, there might be more restrictions applied, even though the summer is going to be like the summer of freedom. So get out there now and experience the world. But I think that we're going to see this sort of progression. And so I'm a big fan of being a little bit conservative and planning first and primarily for the thing we know we can do right now. So if we know that we can gather 100 people, if we know that our county and state regulations have been allowing for that number for quite some time, if we know that we can gather safer outside, if we know that we can gather virtually as many people as we want, I'm a big fan of start planning from the place of what's possible now and then add down the road. It's okay to stay small, but it's also okay to say, you know what? We're going to add another 100 people to this because the venue has capacity to do that. Or we're going to add viewing parties or watch parties. So I think it's much easier to add than it is to do what we were all doing last spring, which is taking away and canceling and apologizing and asking sponsors to stay on board. So I would say design for what you know is possible first. And most of the organizations we're working with across the country are currently planning virtual for 2021 and then have plans and dreams of being able to add in things like a watch party or an after party, house parties, viewing parties, things like that, so that they can add when they know it's safe to do so, but they can also plan for what they know they can deliver. That way they can secure sponsors and start their programming elements to get that ball rolling and not be in the waiting game too long.
Amazing advice. Thank you for that. And now so much has been said about today's event looking very different now than before. And we're heading towards year-round engagements and content and networking and platforms. And the event of the future will no longer have that beginning and end that I was mentioning in the beginning of the podcast, but it will become more like the circle where we, the idea is to have a continuous type of a community that engages and is growing and is changing ideas. Is that possible in a fundraising model? And does that even apply into this model where we're trying to connect the virtual audience with the in-person audience?
I think it does. I've actually seen some organizations really effectively do that, both pre-COVID and during COVID. But the big transition that I'm seeing is that we are looking for ways to continue the emotional relationship, that we're looking to engage donors more than once, and we're looking for them to be invested as a part of a community. And so we work with a couple of environmental groups that do this really well. I love sort of the model that they use. They bring together their major donors, their clients, their constituents, their landowners, their volunteers. They bring everyone together in one big gala event. But then throughout the year, they have a series of events that are typically educational in nature, mm-hmm. but also experiential. So it might be as an environmental group that I'm taking people out to teach them mushroom hunting and safe mushrooms, and then giving them a cooking lesson with how to cook those mushrooms after they've gone hunting for them. It might be that I'm taking them out to explore the waterways the fish habitat are in and allowing them to be a part of releasing fish into that habitat so that there is this emotional investment and connection that continues on through the year and deepens the relationship to mission. So I think that that element is something that people have been doing really well pre-COVID, but I've seen it transition really well during the event. We have an organization that's a higher ed advocacy group, and because they weren't able to bring together their 500 person audience at a conference that they hold every year that's part of their advocacy work, they started this event that kicked off with a virtual grand opening kickoff, and now they're calling it The Journey. And every month, the first Wednesday of the month, they have a big inspirational speaker. And the second Wednesday of the month, they provide tactical tools that you can use to apply. And everyone is connected through these message boards so that they're not just connecting during the virtual events, during the ongoing webinar series, but they're connecting online, through social connections, through emails, so that they have this ongoing nature of relationships. So I think virtual just made that easier. I think it made it that we are now able to both gather people in person and to gather people virtually. It uses people's time well, but it keeps them really connected. And you can do a lot in a 30-minute conversation, right? So there's a lot that you can bring together that virtual opened up the doors for, I think.
Absolutely. Before we move any further, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our main sponsor, Trifun Events, which is a boutique event planning and production agency that will come alongside you, offering personalized event planning and technical support, strategic event design, production and technology management, and flawless execution for live, virtual, and hybrid events. The team at Trifun Events is passionate about planning and producing event experiences that get people involved with true moments of interaction, engagement, and co-creation, while offering white glove treatment throughout the entire planning process, enabling you to reach your event goals with the use of creativity, production tools, and event technology. To find out how Trifun Events can plan and produce your event become memorable, go to trifunevents.com. Now, how can you possibly then monetize on this idea of 365-day community-based basis where you're not necessarily sacrificing on the user experience for your attendees? I know creativity is key, but in the nonprofit sector, how can we do that? Is that like the secret sauce for donors and engagement, how you're going to have to look at sponsorships, looking like kind of like breaking the box on that as well?
Yeah, I think sponsorships are a key factor there, because now in the virtual space, we have so many more benefits we can offer sponsors. And we have found that to be the absolute amazing gem that has come out of virtual, is that we are able to include a commercial for the sponsor. We're able to invite the sponsor to be a part of the event on the stage with us, because we can pre-record them and know exactly how long their content is. We have landing pages now and online auction pages and a variety of different online content elements that we can have branded to them with their logo. So I think that the addition of sponsorship has been, or the improvements to sponsorship has been a gift from virtual. And I think we'll continue to see sponsorship remain really strong in this ongoing environment where we're engaging folks 365 days a year. I think sponsorship just got another boost. We just added all these new ways that people can get visibility. So I think that sponsorship is critical. I'm also seeing this leverage for membership. Mm-hmm. So if you have a membership base or you have a member organization, you can also use it to leverage giving circle levels. So every time you increase your gift size and move into another giving circle, you get invitations to other engagements. And that really helps you feel connected and invested to the work of the organization. So I think you can monetize it in incentives, in your giving. You can monetize it in your raffles and auctions. The prize that you're giving away can actually be an experience with your organization. Some of the best auction items we have seen have been auction items that are specific experiences that you can offer your donors, like going out and being a part of a fish release, right? That experiential opportunity. We had an organization that's a summer camp, and one of their highest selling auction items was a chance for you to host your own family at summer camp for a 5-day weekend. And the bidding was so incredibly high. It was amazing. And that was something unique to them. And it was a way for someone who had an emotional connection to summer camp for them to come back and relive it as an adult and have their own experience with their family. So unique opportunities where you can really sell people on connection and mission is something that I think we're going to continue to see, both hybrid, virtual, in person. I think we're going to really see creativity there so that people can immerse their donors in their mission and in their work.
Absolutely. I would totally sign up for that experience for sure. Now, we can talk about all these amazing things without touching a little bit on budget and cost. So what do you see to be the general associated cost of planning a hybrid event versus, say, a virtual or an in-person moving into the fall of 2021?
I think we're going to see the actual event costs remain low. The expenses for events are still small gatherings, mostly. So catering is lower, venue cost is lower, because we're really looking at, you know, the room being a smaller audience. Where you're going to want to spend money and where you're going to want to really have support is in engaging you and engaging an AV production team that can be your partner to take on the technology side to navigate the hybrid space. But there are so many tools that have come out that have been developed quickly in this time that it's becoming easier and easier to be able to access the resources you need free or low cost. Giving thermometers, text to give platforms, auction platforms, streaming platforms. All of a sudden, the resources and tools available have become plentiful and the cost has become less. So I think we're really looking at navigating the same event cost that you had in the past divided by headcount. So it's the reduced headcount that's going to reduce that cost of catering, venue, AV production in the room. That'll reduce your expenses. And then add on the cost of the streaming content, of having a technology partner that can really work with you on what the audience at home is seeing and what your streaming platforms need to be set up to do. That way, you can spend the money and the expertise and get sort of that breath that you need to be able to step back from the things you don't know and let someone who understands that space manage them.
Absolutely. And I think one extra tip there is, you know, try to hire whoever your AV provider partner is to be the same for in-person as well as the live streaming component, because I feel like there's a little bit of a confusion, especially, you know, for someone that's not as tech savvy as you are, Samantha, where they are thinking that they need two different providers. And the moment you do that, your cost raises. But if you're going to try to find someone that's already done the in-person and now they can bring the live streaming element because they've done that as well, then to the equipment can be serving two purposes. And that's something that it's funny to have that conversation sometimes with someone that's not as proficient in understanding what that means, because they're like, well, I thought I needed someone to do the in-person and then I needed someone else to do the virtual. They're like, no, you just need one well-rounded production company to do both, especially if they've done both in the last 15, 16 months of events that we've been doing.
Well, I also think too, there's some elements that are new to the environment that you're going to want to think about. And if you have someone that is already sitting in that hybrid space as an event designer, production manager, you'll have a partner in thinking through those. And, you know, for me, I'm always thinking about the experience of the host, the person on stage. What do they need to reach up through the screen and connect to the audience and to be able to connect to the people in the room? And that's where you're going to have new elements added to your event. You're going to need confidence monitors that give them some orientation to what's happening online. They either need to be able to see a big screen that has the chat feed on it so that they can at least see what sort of activity is happening, a big screen that has the thermometer activity on it so they have some orientation to what's happening. But also I think that they need some teleprompter tool that gives them all the names to recognize so that they can understand all the giving that's happening in and out of the room and do that recognition seamlessly. So that's probably a series of screens and monitors that are now on your stage. But then you also have the added element of room full of people that are watching the event live, but know that there is another audience out there somewhere. And by showing them what the audience is going to be seeing virtually, they now can also be a part of that virtual experience. So if I have an auctioneer recognizing names off the thermometer, and in the virtual world, they're going to see the two side by side, put those on the big screen in the room and let your audience know and be a part of that and see the thermometer going up and see their name show up on the screen and see what the audience at home is seeing so that everyone can be a part of the event equally. So a partner that's a production partner that's been doing both of these things will help you to navigate what you're going to need to add to each space to make it seamless and not make it feel like, my biggest fear is that we're going to have events where the audience at home feels like this was not meant for them. They're not included. They're not a part of it. Or the audience in the room is going to feel like they're just in observation mode watching this virtual filming take place. You're going to want to make sure that you have a production partner and a live host on that stage that feels comfortable navigating both spaces with you so you can make the event feel like it's meant for both audiences.
That is going to be a definitely fine balance to keep between the two sides of this hybrid model. Now, as a top leader and entrepreneur in this event space, have you found yourself needing to overcome, not just for yourself and maybe your team, but also for your clients, this idea of decision fatigue that if I feel like it's plagued a little bit many organizations during the pandemic?
Yeah, I agree. I think we've experienced one of two things. We've either experienced organizations who have been nimble and have completely transformed how they meet their mission and serve the community, but at the expense of their own well-being, right? They have worked all hours. They have burned both candles or the candle at both ends. So I think that we've seen sort of that end of the spectrum. And then we've seen the other end where organizations have just not been able to move forward because there isn't a consensus and there's so many options. And a lot of those organizations aren't around, honestly. We've seen 14% of all nonprofits close their door during the pandemic. And a lot of that, I think, was decision fatigue or simply just the inability to move forward. So I think for our work and our space of planning lots of events and constantly rethinking and learning new things, I think it's really important that you take some time to reflect, that you take a step back. So if you have a break, take it. If you have opportunities for vacation, take it. I suspect that we are in this liminal space where over the next couple of months, we're going to see the ability to take a deep breath and then to run full steam ahead. And so we're encouraging everyone that we work with and everyone on our team to take some time to reflect. But then we are also very intentionally planning for our events in the future to be moments of reunion, to intentionally mark and celebrate what we all just survived together and where we're headed together. Because I think that if you don't take that moment, then you feel like something's missing. If you just go back to the way things were, or we're in a new normal, you're missing that opportunity for a transition moment together. So I would do it with your team. I would do it with your donors. And I think that that's what this next year is going to be about, is going to be about marking, celebrating that we survived, and looking ahead toward what can we take with us that are learning opportunities, and how could we move forward in the same creative ways without continuing to ask everyone to work harder than they've ever worked in their life. And I think that that's a real thing that's been going on for almost any organization out there, is that this is the hardest year of work that they've ever had. So take a moment, take a breath, mark it, find ways to come back into community together and intentionally re-enter. Because I think that if we just go back to the way things were, we've missed, we sort of ignored that the past year happened, and that'll leave a hole for folks, including yourself.
Absolutely. You segue basically my last question, which had to do with mental health and how to stay ahead of the curve with everything that we've been going through, and how having this mental health awareness and make it become front and center during the pandemic, and allowing your company culture to be aware of it, and having those discussions, vulnerable discussions sometimes within the company culture, is so important. So I guess my question to you, I'm turning it around, how are you prioritizing your mental health, and how do you have any personal strategies that you like to share with our audience, especially when it comes to, you know, event planning, and with an event planner and organizer in mind? What is your strategy for success?
Well, I think we tend to work seasonally. So when school's in session, fundraising events are in high demand. So we are busiest in the spring and in the fall, and we tend to have a little bit of a breath in the summer. Last year, we didn't get that because everything that we were doing in the spring kept moving, and all the needles were sort of moving down the line. So for the past 18 months, in fact, I sent a message to my teammates today and said, 457 days ago, we left our office. 457 days. I was like, oh my gosh, that's insane. But it's true that we have been working through a screen. We have been connecting to people via a screen. We have been sort of without other human connection in a deep, powerful way. And that to me is the moment we need to mark right now. So we are encouraging everyone on our staff to find the time and take their vacation. And we're like threatening people, if you don't take vacation, you're not going to get it back. This is your time. So we're encouraging everyone to really take vacation that feeds them and nourishes them. But we're also doing a series of intentional events for ourselves to be moments of demarcation, of change, and to really intentionally re-enter together. So those of us who left the office 457 days ago are coming back together and reuniting in the office to really have a moment together to celebrate what we just did. And then to think about, now that we're in this new world, how does our office need to change? What do we need to do differently in our space? How does our space need to serve our needs differently? We're having these moments of dinners together and community gatherings together. And then as we get toward the end of the summer, we're really focused on the plan ahead. And we're spending a lot of time intentionally asking ourselves, what did we learn in the past 18 months that we're going to carry forward? And how are we going to do that thoughtfully in a way that takes care of ourselves, but also takes care of our clients and our organizations? So we're trying to be very thoughtful and intentional that this isn't just a, oops, back to normal, or, oh, we're just going back to the ballroom. We're trying to think about, what if the ballroom's not there for a while? How do we sort of take these baby steps that actually bring deeper meanings to these moments and allow us some air and some space? And the final thing that we've done as a team is we've set a timeline so that there's nothing ambiguous for our staff. We've all been working from home. And so we've set the timeline that on Labor Day weekend, or the week after Labor Day, we will do an assessment at that time about what returning to the office looks like. But until now, from now to Labor Day, we will be working at home. And working at home means you could work from anywhere. So use this time to take care of seeing your family and take care of seeing friends. And we just this week have someone that's working from Bend because they're with family. We have someone else that's working from Temecula because her mom is going to be having a medical procedure and she wanted to be there for it. So we're asking folks to really invest in themselves first so that they can come back into the work feeling renewed and refreshed, because this year was not easy. And so it's a time that we have to like take a breath for a minute.
Absolutely. Now, as we are recording this episode, this is actually coming on the annual conference that you are planning, which is Elevate. And I know we're kind of missing it when we're going to air the episode itself. But do you have any words as far as the conference goes and maybe for next year or post conference that our audience should know about?
Yeah, thank you. Elevate is an annual conference for nonprofits to look at how events can impact your mission and your fundraising. And the nice thing is that we've been able to be very nimble with Elevate and think through what do people need right now. So last year we moved Elevate so that we could address how do you go virtual quickly. This year, we're in June, we're having the conference address hybrid events and what the future of fundraising can look like. We'll be then continuing the conversation, just like you said, these 365-day engagements. We're going to have a collective learning lab space in which we're inviting nonprofits in to meet once a month to be in dialogue about what they're doing, what they're trying, what's working, what didn't work, and learning lessons that we can all share collectively with each other. We invite everyone into that, and you can go to elevatenonprofit.com to learn about that. But then next June, we'll be gathering again, hopefully this time in person in Portland at the EcoTrust building, where we plan to still have a hybrid element and have it available to folks who are not able to travel to Portland.
Awesome news. I am looking forward to next year. Although I'm looking forward for this year to joining virtual as well. So it's good, you know, to be able to have that option, especially for people like me that don't live in Portland anymore. So we are all over the place. And this just opened a global audience for a conference that otherwise would have been very much local to Portland. Now, Samantha, this was a great time. I'm so happy that we got to do this. For anyone that wants to learn more about you, swim strategies, and all the tips and tricks that you've been able to implement so far and will come up with in the future, I'm sure, where can our audience find you?
They can find us at swaimstrategies.com. And I'm going to direct everyone to go take a look at our resources page because we have a huge library of resources that we are constantly updating with the intent of providing free downloadable tools to nonprofits. So things like updated sponsorship packages about what can you ask sponsors to do for the virtual space or the hybrid space, toolkits for communicating to your audience. So lots of resources, lots of free content there for our folks. We encourage anyone to reach out anytime. We are here to really lift the nonprofit sector and to help organizations navigate this new sticky space to figure out what hybrid looks like.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for this time together, Samantha. I look forward to seeing you in Portland sometime in the future, who knows, but I appreciate your time here today. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day and we'll see you at Elevate. That's right. Thank you again.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to seeing you soon.
Me too. Okay, friends, this is it for today's episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us and all of you that are listening to us. I am super honored that this podcast has such a wide international audience tuning in. So wherever you're listening from, wherever you're tuning in from, I am thankful and grateful for you. Do take a moment to leave a 5-star review to make this podcast visible to more event professionals just like yourself. Find us on Instagram at Events Demystify Podcast. I welcome your feedback on there via DM messages or, you know, via the old email podcast at trifunevents.com. And in the meantime, I wish you have a wonderful rest of your day. Until next time.